to the fifth case on the morning call, appeal number 08-2749, United States versus Eddie Knowles, Jr. Ms. Connor.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Carrie Connor, and I'm here today on behalf of Eddie Knowles. Mr. Knowles was convicted of a drug conspiracy in which he pled guilty to a conspiracy to distribute in excess of 50 grams of crack cocaine. That was in 2000. After the amendments to the United States sentencing guidelines in November of 2007, Mr. Knowles sought a reduction in his sentence. That request was denied by the district court, and the district court denied that request because the court found, based on information it cited in the pre-sentence report, that though the conclusion had originally been that Mr. Knowles was responsible for an excess of 1.5 kilograms of crack cocaine, that in fact the court believed that there was sufficient basis to conclude that Mr. Knowles was responsible for an excess of 4.5 kilograms of crack cocaine. The decision of the court...
If that number is correct, then you couldn't benefit from the amended guideline.
If that number were correct, if the court had the ability to make that conclusion, that Mr. Knowles was specifically responsible for an excess of 4.5 kilograms of crack, then the guideline range itself would not have changed, Your Honor.
Is it your position that the court was not able or should not have been able to consider that, or that even considering it, it didn't add up to...
Well, Your Honor, we've argued that the court should not have been permitted to make new factual findings in the context of a 3582C2 proceeding without a full hearing on the matter. However, I am aware that this court has issued two separate opinions more recently. We have to keep in mind that this appeal was initially filed in 2008 and stayed due to the issue of the content of a waiver of appeal in the plea agreement. That's why the government's brief wasn't filed until much more recently. However, this court has had two separate cases on the issue. Very recently, United States versus Hall and United States versus Wood, which arrived at different conclusions in those cases. Hall required a remand, and Wood did not. And so, Your Honor, we maintain, Your Honor, and would maintain if we were to file a petition, that in fact it is inappropriate for the district court to make new factual findings in a 3582 petition. But I do understand that in Wood, this court found that those findings could, in fact, be made.
Ms. Connor?
Yes.
Back in the original sentencing hearing, I thought the district judge said there being no objections to the factual statements contained in the pre-sentence report, the court adopts those statements as it finds as its findings of fact. Now, that puts you up in the 60 kilogram range, right?
Well, Your Honor, that is really where the crux of the issue lies. The probation report included a great deal of information regarding the Jason Best operation, much of which did in fact come from Mr. Knowles. In the pre-sentence report, the conclusion was that there were approximately 59 kilograms of crack sold from three separate houses. However, Your Honor, the pre-sentence report did not specifically delineate of that 59 kilograms what was Mr. Knowles actually responsible for. I believe that the statement that the probation officer used was that Mr. Knowles either distributed or helped. Now, helped is not a legal term because the court at sentencing addressed this issue not at all. There was no discussion at sentencing on the record because, in fact, there was no dispute regarding the pre-sentence report, which in practical terms there would not have been because the only issue at that time was whether or not the crack cocaine was in excess of 1.5 kilograms. And under acceptance of responsibility, one cannot frivolously deny, and if one chooses not to dispute, obviously their acceptance of responsibility remains intact. In this case, there was absolutely no reason for any party to take on the issue of 1.5 versus 4.5 because the law was not such that 4.5 was at issue in any way, shape, or form.
But it wasn't a close margin. It wasn't close between 1.5 and 4.5 here. The evidence at the sentencing hearing was that, what, three different crack houses were being run, and this Knowles guy was taking a shift at each of them at various times, and they were selling lots of crack cocaine out of those houses with almost a business-like precision.
I think that would be fair to say.
So if we would send it back,
well, I do think, Your Honor, whether or not, as the court concluded in Hall, the district court would in fact conclude, doing a specific analysis as to Mr. Knowles, that in fact the 4.5 was exceeded or not, is remains a decision for the district court still to possess. And in this case, as we indicated, most of the pre-sentence report came from a cooperation statement given by Mr. Knowles. And I raise in my brief that there could very well be an issue as to 1B1.8. Now, Mr. Bell did provide me, yesterday I received a copy of that statement, which is a post-arrest statement. But I don't believe, Your Honor, that keeps the issue out, because the circumstances of that statement would, in fact, if we're contesting the amount of drugs involved, 1.5 versus 4.5, would in fact be quite significant. But regardless, Your Honor, Mr. Knowles, very much like Hall in some sense, was only involved in distribution for 12 months. I should say Hall was involved for much longer, but there was a great deal of dispute about whether we were talking about powder or crack.
Daily shifts. I mean, they were running 7 days a week, three 8-hour shifts, even for a year. That's a lot of crack cocaine. It's just hard for me to see how this even gets close.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree because of the 1B1.8 issue, compounded by when we sit down and we actually dissect a statement like that with estimates about sales, Your Honor, often we find that the individual is not responsible for nearly as much as the total conspiracy. And with that in mind, it's not clear actually from the statement whether or not the 8 months plus 1.5 months plus 3 months, or just 8 months, Your Honor. And ultimately, it is a decision, I believe, that the district court should be making. I would also make the court aware, which I'm sure the panel is aware, that the United States Supreme Court has just accepted the case of Dillon versus United States. And therefore, there is clearly going to be a resolution on the issue of whether 1B1.10, which in fact is in essence the Booker issue, pertains to 3582C2. With that issue currently up in the air, and this court's decision on Cunningham in essence up in the air, it would be prudent, I believe, in this case for the court to withhold a decision until we know whether or not, according to the Supreme Court, the district court in this case can rely on 1B1.10 without using its own discretion in determining the appropriate sentence.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bell.
May it please the court, my name is Gary Bell. I represent the government and the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Indiana. Your Honors, in April of 2000, the defendant signed a confession. It was a multi-page statement. That confession appears in counsel's brief as well as in the offense conduct section of the PSR. Your Honor, in counsel's brief and at argument today, she suggested that it may be inappropriate to rely on that statement. That's a misstatement. In my brief, I attempted to address the issue. That statement was not the result of a signed proffer agreement. That statement was not the result of an attorney being involved. The statement was a confession. It was obtained when the local task force, it's commonly known as GRIT in Northwest Indiana, approached the defendant and asked him about his drug dealing activities in Gary, Indiana. He then signed the statement. It was 4 or 5 pages long, and again, it's contained in the pre-sentence report. So there is no issue about the appropriateness of the information contained in the pre-sentence report. Further, I would suggest to the court, because there was no objection at the trial level, or at the sentencing hearing, even if it was an issue, that issue would be waived. Getting back to the statement itself, Mr. Knowles described in great detail his role with the Bronx Boys street gang, and in essence he described how he personally distributed crack cocaine from three houses in Gary, and how he was also an overseer of others in that operation. And, of course, that statement was contained in the pre-sentence report. The district court adopted the findings because there was no objections, and determined that at least 59 kilograms of crack, the defendant was responsible for 59 kilograms of crack. You can make the finding that the defendant was responsible for more than 4.5 kilograms in a number of ways. First of all, he admitted to personally distributing more than 4.5 kilograms, if you look at the statement in the pre-sentence report. Second of all, he aided and abetted numerous individuals in the distribution of crack cocaine. And third of all, you can find that he was involved in jointly undertaken criminal activity, and that the amount that the others who were working for him would be accountable to him. It was clearly foreseeable. It was more than foreseeable. He knew about it. So, Your Honor, when Judge Moody or the district court relied on the pre-sentence report, which I would suggest is entirely appropriate based on what occurred in the Woods case, as Ms. Connor just mentioned, this court decided Woods a number of months ago, and in Woods, I believe this court affirmed the practice of relying on information contained in the pre-sentence report. In Woods, the district court, both Judge Miller and Judge Sharp, neither one of those judges at the original sentencing hearing indicated that the defendant was responsible for more than 4.5 kilograms of crack. However, in deciding the 3582 motion, or the motion to reduce sentence based on the new crack amendment, Judge Miller, I believe, looked at the pre-sentence report. The pre-sentence report indicated that humongous or large amounts of crack cocaine had been dealt in the South Bend area, and that the defendant was personally responsible for more than 4.5 kilograms of crack. So I would suggest in this case, Judge Moody did nothing different. He relied on the pre-sentence report, which, again, is very clear, and it was appropriate. So in summary, clearly, Judge Moody did not abuse his discretion in finding the defendant, Eddie Knowles, responsible for more than 4.5 kilograms of crack, and I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. If there are no further questions, sit down.
Okay. Ms. Connor, anything further?
I would only point out to the court that in Woods, the defendants at issue were determined to have been involved in a conspiracy between 1992 and 1998, a very long period of time. There were, I believe, hundreds, I think in excess of 300 kilograms of crack cocaine involved in that conspiracy, and it was quite clear that those defendants were intricately involved in all aspects of the conspiracy. Mr. Knowles is much more like Mr. Hall, where in Mr. Hall's plea, he actually made admissions, for example, between 1998 and 1999 to distribution of about one-fourth of a kilo of crack cocaine per month. So clearly, adding that amount up, it's likely to be in excess of 4.5, in addition to his admissions at the time of the plea that he had distributed 1 to 2 kilograms of a mixture of powder and crack in between 1999 and 2000. Mr. Knowles, on the other hand, though he gave extensive information regarding the Best conspiracy, only worked for Mr. Best for a period of approximating 12 months or possibly a little less than that. And under those circumstances, though one could conclude from Hall that Mr. Hall had distributed more than 4.5, it does require extrapolation to the extent that the record does not actually reflect the amount of responsibility on that defendant. And under these circumstances, this case should be remanded to the district court for specific findings regarding Mr. Knoll's responsibility. But in addition, I would request that this court do hold this decision in abeyance until after the United States Supreme Court case, because if the Supreme Court case does in fact find that 1B1.10 is not binding on the district court, the decision in this case could be very, very different. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case is taken under advisement. Proceed to the next.